Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, before the break, we heard a couple minutes from John F. Kennedy's famed 1961 City on a Hill speech, where he invoked the spirit of John Winthrop and other vaunted Puritan founders of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Winthrop reminded early colonists that they were seeking to found that shining city upon a hill, that all the eyes of the world would be upon them. Now, that soaring ambition never withered on the vine in Massachusetts. In fact, it came to its most powerful fruition in Boston, a city that wasn't content with mere hilltop status, but rather considered itself to be, as we all know, the hub of the universe, a place of big ideas, world-class institutions, home to a populace that set the nation's intellectual agenda on everything from political and social progress to abolition and education reform to innovation, technology, and modern-day medical miracles. In other words, we like to think big, and we like to think big of ourselves. This is the unspoken backdrop to the 2013 Boston mayoral election. For the first time in 20 years, Bostonians have the opportunity to choose a new mayor for the 21st century. So, has the tone of the race matched the lofty self-regard the city has? Honestly, I'd say no. All due respect to both candidates, John Connolly and Marty Walsh, but this once-in-a-generation race feels as if it's been mired in the same old small-bore petty politics of yore. There have been important issues discussed, education chief among them, but have we heard either candidate really articulate a bold vision for Boston? Do they even have one? So that is the hypothesis that I offer you today. The Boston mayoral race seems to lack the grand ambitions that the city once had for itself. The city on a hill needs more than neighborhood and class-based political squabbles. We need a civic conversation that reflects how Boston wishes to catapult itself into the 21st century. That is my hypothesis. So now let's test it.
Wow.
Doing so to have a great panel to help me test it. And I'm prepared to be wrong, by the way, listeners. So amongst the panel, joining us is Christopher Lydon, longtime television and radio anchor in Boston, now host of Radio Open Source. He also ran for mayor of Boston in 1993. Christopher Lydon, what a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Lovely to be here, Meghna. Thank you.
Also with us is Michael Curry, president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Michael, great to have you back on the show as well.
Great to be here again.
And Ed Glaser, professor of economics at Harvard and the author of Triumph of the City, How Our Greatest Invention Makes Us Richer, Smarter, Greener, Healthier, and Happier. Ed, great to have you back on the show as well.
Wonderful to be here.
All right, listeners, so you heard my big, long hypothesis. What do you make of it? Do you think the tone of the Boston mayor's race is what the city needs this time around? Do you agree with me? Do you disagree with me? Are education, unions, and class-based struggles exactly the issues that Boston's next mayor needs to tackle? Or do you want to hear something bigger, something bolder from the candidates? What hasn't been discussed in this race? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. All right, gentlemen, so let me just start with you. Let me use you guys as my test. Chris, was I totally off base in being critical of the tone of the race? It's not big or bold enough?
Yeah, the campaign has undershot the mark, maybe. But I would just suggest, put the politics aside for a moment. The reality of Boston, day in, day out, is approaching that city on a hill peak again, and even the hub of the universe. We are a global city now, incredibly prosperous, in a very, very good place, I think, for the future. We don't talk about it enough, and we don't accept the responsibility that comes with it. I mean, to those to whom much is given, much is required, mm-hmm. we're not dealing with the problems that are still there in terms of equality, especially in terms of education. But the fundamental reality that's more important than this race, if I may say, is that we have incredibly promising industries, most especially higher education,
right.
But it goes across the board. I mean, I thought Barack Obama caught it wonderfully in that talk on the day after the marathon, or you know, a day or two after. He came here to get credentialed, to get his ticket punched. So did Michelle. So do thousands of people every year. And it becomes a kind of a global network, like No other city has this. It's not only the Red Sox Nation and the bond of affection with sort of restaurants and landmarks around here. People are stamped with Boston, and they stay that way.
Right.
And it includes not just statesmen, including Bibi Netanyahu, who did his time at MIT, but it's poets, it's musicians, it's cardiologists, it's performers. We have a very, and it's not just MIT and Harvard either. It's equally the Berklee College of Music, which is the biggest music school in the world now. It includes Emerson, actors,
yeah,
et cetera.
This is exactly sort of the different Bostons that maybe a mayor can be singularly capable of knitting together. And I want to get to that issue a little more deeply in just a moment. But
also,
I gotta give our other guys a shot here. Michael, what do you think?
You know, it's funny. As Chris says, we're approaching the city on the hill. For me, you know, I can't help but think it's a tale of two cities. If you are of the business community, if you are of the chamber, if you're Rick Lord and Associated Industries of Massachusetts, then you're excited about the development and the growth that happened under Mayor Menino and then the potential that exists under either of these mayoral candidates. But I have, you know, as a role as an NAACP, have to bring people back to the community. The reality is that this city has not achieved what it needs to in terms of public education. Our education system is not as competitive, and our kids are not competing against other kids who have better systems that they're coming out of.
Well, just to be fair, this is one issue that has received a lot of attention.
Exactly. And to your earlier point, I think that's where I'm excited about this race, is that the reality is that the community issues are now rising to the top. So public safety becomes a common conversation in almost every mayoral debate, whereas if the conversation was a few years ago, maybe that would not be what the candidates were focusing on. Health disparities, mm-hmm. Major conversation, and then maybe last but not least, economic development. How do you tie the innovation district to local communities and making sure that there's development and pathways to wealth
right.
and success in communities across Boston?
Okay, so Ed, let me hear your first thought, and then we will open the gates here.
There was a time in the 60s and even through the 70s in which mayors would, in fact, speak great thoughts, that they would have bold visions for the future of their cities. That high-flowing rhetoric, I think, lost a fair amount of credibility in the doldrums of the late 70s and for many cities through the 80s. The sense that there were unlimited possibilities for city government is no longer, and I think voters understandably are wary of that.
Except now there's been a whole slew of books, yours included, that talk about how cities are the engine of political innovation.
I believe that. But saying that cities have no limits is not the same thing as saying that a mayor can do anything he wants. And there are, in fact, you know, real limits on what mayors can do, because they misbehave, or if they act in a way that attacks a particular group, that group just leaves. And as a result, we have a focus on real deliverables, on improving those schools, on making safety better, and on taking tangible steps that will make the lives of ordinary Bostonians better. And I don't think that's something that Boston should be ashamed of, as much as I, like you, miss the big ideas that are, after all, you know, exciting.
Okay, so now I'm going to open the gates, gentlemen. Feel free to dive in. I won't try to control the conversation so much. But let's get into this question. Have we had the race that maybe this Boston of today needs? I mean, Ed seems
I'm not sure we ever do or ever will. I want to buy into Ed's premise that cities are the dynamic game changer in American politics right now, and not necessarily the mayors. It happens almost, there's an organic energy in the, what I would call the education culture in this community, that is dominant now. And it's dominant at every level, whether the mayor is out front or not. The irony, and it becomes a neurosis, I think, in our community, is that we're a world magnet for the brightest kids in Burma, in Africa, in Boise. You name it. They can come here.
And then they leave.
Well, yes. And when their kids get to be 6 years old, they have to move out of the city of Boston so they can get a, you know, reasonable education. This is crazy, and it bugs us. At some level, we know this is not only socially unjust; it is just kind of ridiculous in an information age that is where all the strength is here. We have only 50,000 kids in our school system. We could make a popular and productive investment in being a model to American cities in how you make a public education system work, charters or otherwise. But we don't do it.
It's the most important thing, and you're absolutely right. There's no thing that hampers our cities more than the fact that parents with children feel like they have to leave. And there is no greater challenge for social justice.
We can't explain in the city of Horace Mann, the Latin school.
Why can't we explain that? That's what I want to understand. Why can't we explain that Harvard, the whole slew of great reformers of education, yet we have this persistent problem in Boston public schools, you know, for the past couple decades now, or at least
It goes back to the bold vision, and though I would argue that oftentimes in elections you get these very lofty ideas, but as we've seen on the national level, we've seen on a local level, an idea doesn't necessarily translate into what you can do, because then there's budgets, then there's whether you have the capacity to do it, whether there's a political will to support whatever that lofty vision was. And the reality is the Boston Public Schools requires a lofty vision. It requires something that says, okay, not only am I going to run on this, but I'm going to deliver on changes within the system. If that's extended days, if that's more autonomy with the superintendents, that's being discussed with these mayoral candidates. But now we have to make sure they deliver on the conversation. And that's where I think our role is.
So, Michael, let me ask you a question, though. In an election, do you think that maybe the media, people who engage with the candidates, ought to be pushing the candidates harder for more specifics on the engagement part? Exactly what will you do when you first get stonewalled by the Boston Teachers Union? What will you do when parents throw up their arms saying they don't like a school reassignment system?
Yeah. I'm not sure that there's so much value in that, quite honestly, because I think actually asking about hypotheticals is so far from the reality that you will face. And just think about the great vision and the great people that we've had leading many of our schools. Michelle Rhee, Joel Klein, I mean, I admire Joel to death, moved the needle only a tiny amount just because the difficulties on the ground are so very, very hard. So I'm not sure that question is so vital. The real question is whether or not we get in a mayor who will prove, in this case, prove himself on a daily basis able to stay committed to this cause and fighting for it. And I just don't know how you ask the questions that make sure that person can commit to that.
It's a problem politically. It comes to mind Dapper O'Neill going through Fields Corner in the Dorchester Day Parade probably 20 years ago, and he was alarmed and upset that there were so many Vietnamese in Fields Corner. What are these people here? And he had an unnice way of putting it, too. Somebody around that time said, why are the Vietnamese in Fields Corner? Because the red line goes to MIT and Harvard. This thing exists, this ambition, this dream exists at a grassroots cultural level that doesn't, the politicians may never get it. Somebody, and it might have been John Conley, it could still be John Conley, is going to hang a career on the idea that this is the obvious, undone priority in the whole Boston, New England scene, and just plain do it. It's not hugely expensive. It would be moderately expensive, but it'd have unbelievable glory and rebound for him to crack this. Not that everybody has to go to Harvard and MIT either, but I don't know. Walk down what used to be a very grubby downtown crossing sort of neighborhood there in the theater district and look at the effect that Emerson's relocation has had that part of the world. The Paramount Theater all lit up with Arts Emerson, but kids from all over the world, and including Dorchester and New England, learning the skills of multimedia entertainment. There's a culture there that if the politicians could just get out of the way, will administer itself. Watch the Berkeley kids tutoring the Latin school trumpet players in this 18 musical aggregations in the Latin school today, and you see, wait a sec, it's all here. Just get out of the way and let it keep growing.
Well, listeners, in this last day before Bostonians choose the first new mayor they've had in 20 years, we're talking about the tone of this race and whether the candidates have presented a big, bold vision for the future of the city of Boston. That's the kind of vision you'd like to hear. You just heard the voice of one of my guests, Christopher Lydon, longtime television and radio anchor in Boston, now host of Radio Open Source. He also dipped his toe in politics and ran for mayor in 1993. We're also joined by Michael Curry, president of the Boston branch of the NAACP, and Ed Glaser, professor of economics at Harvard and author of Triumph of the City. Now, you know, one thing that Chris, you mentioned and has sort of percolated up here through the conversation thus far is this global sense of what, you know, Boston as a place, as a city, as an idea is today in 2013. And that's another thing that I've wondered, you know, have we heard enough of? Have we heard the mayoral candidates talk about what their vision is? Isn't not just for the neighborhoods, for example, but for greater Boston, the metro area and how it's plugged into the world economically, technologically, socially? Because wouldn't it be a powerful sort of message to say, I'm going to work with all the leaders of the cities and towns surrounding Boston to, you know, really beef up this area as a whole?
Well, I think there's some conversations that have happened in that area. If you've watched a few of the last debates about transportation, about the mayor of this city, the next mayor, working with the mayors in the surrounding cities to come up with a transportation plan that makes them realize that transportation is going to benefit them as well. That it's not just about Boston. It's about interconnection between all of our cities. John always talks about trying to make sure that we are ambassadors for Boston, that we're driving big business and corporations that can help drive our local economies by, you know, getting them to come to Massachusetts and coming to Boston. Mm. So I think that the conversations are sort of there, whether they've had enough time in this sort of shortened electoral period to really dig into those issues is probably not the case.
Let me throw out the number again. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Listeners, for you to get your 2 cents in here on what you think the tone of this mayor's race has been and what it should be for Boston of the 21st century. And let me throw out this statistic that I just read today, that, for example, the top 100 metropolitan areas in the country, Boston amongst them, occupy just 12% of the landmass of the United States, but 2/3 of the population lives there and are responsible for 75% of the nation's GDP. Like, that's the sandbox that we're playing in, is it not?
It is. It is. Our cities are our economic heartland, and they need leaders who will help power them into the 21st century. And I agree with you that actually thinking about a regional role is important. Now, of course, we are Massachusetts. We are the home ground of local power in this country. So I think, again, you need to start in a way that's realistic. But an alliance that sees the advantages of together trying to attract outside businesses to come to Boston, attract smart immigrant entrepreneurs to come to Boston. There's a lot to be said for that. And I think both mayoral candidates will probably do something of that nature.
Can you both effectively by, you know, reaching out and thinking big, but also not forgetting that your constituents are the neighborhoods of Boston, and to not sort of let them feel as if they've been left behind yet again?
It's vital, because if it doesn't, it looks like you're just trying to take care of businesses. That's part of the difference between Menino and Bloomberg, is in fact when Menino was pushing the Innovation District, I don't think anyone doubted that he was doing it for the neighborhoods, that he in fact thought that the Innovation District was something that would be of value to middle-income and lower-middle-income Bostonians, whereas with a wealthier, more business-oriented mayor, it seems like they're just taking care of their friends far too often, even if they aren't.
And you couple that with other approaches. And the Mayor Menino, one of the other credits, I served on one of the main streets many years ago, Center South Main Street. So he had business development support for local businesses during his time as mayor, to couple that with the Innovation District. So I think the next mayor will need to have a large-scale approach to the city and business development, and then, as discussed, a community-based approach as well.
And Chris, what do you make of that?
Well, you mentioned de Blasio. What I'm missing in the Boston race is the voice of de Blasio against the Bloomberg, or in this case, the Menino years. I think de Blasio, maybe by luck or flip of the coin or luck of the draw, has changed the conversation in New York in a populist direction away from the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. I think a similar accident could have changed the conversation here too. For example, you know, if Ms. Gola Ritchie had a few more votes and come into this thing in the finals, she might well be the favorite tonight. Mm. And I'm sure Michelle Obama would have moved to Boston and brought an incredible attention. it's supposed to, we would have had a totally different tone. If John Conley had got his first wish, which was that Menino run again, and that he would take him on as the sort of insurgent everybody, I think we might well have had a more de Blasio reaction against 20 years of very, very, shall we say, orderly but not expressive and government that has left these huge gaps. We have an inequality crisis in this city, too.
Absolutely.
The big job is to fill that in. The most important one, I think we all believe, is a radically more greater attention to schools, but there are also other
housing
right. is the other one. I mean, we are building too many, as they said in New York, as de Blasio's people, we're building too many luxury apartments and too little middle income affordable housing.
Well, in fact,
we've got to address that for a family
making near median income, only 12% of the housing stock or thereabouts in Boston is within their reach. I mean, it's an astonishing number. We've got some callers who want to tell me that I'm wrong, which I always welcome. Bob is calling from Charlestown. You're on the air, Bob.
Hi, I just want to challenge the opening premise that these candidates haven't discussed the great issues facing the city. I believe that there's one great issue, and that's education. Boston is doing everything well right now, but the school system clearly hasn't been successful. Both candidates have talked about this. Clearly, John Conley has staked his campaign on it. If he is successful in revolutionizing the school system and making Boston the first larger, older city with a successful school system, that will be an incredible achievement.
And Bob, what if he's not successful?
I think they ought to be credited for that. I think they ought to be credited for focusing on that. And I think Walsh has also talked about it. But Conley's talked about making fundamental changes.
Well, Bob, did you hear Chris Leiden's question? What if he's not successful?
Well, I think Boston has one advantage over other cities, and that is the mayor appoints the school committee. Now, he's going to have to deal with contracts, of course, but appointing the school committee gives the mayor an enormous advantage that other mayors don't have.
Right. Bob, I'm going to cut you off there because I want to take another call in, but thank you so much for your call from Charlestown. Let's go to Peter, who's calling from Roslindale. You're on the air, Peter.
Yeah, hi. I want to comment on the schools as well. I just want to make the point. I appreciate Christopher's enthusiasm and optimism, but no large urban district with a large population in poverty has conquered the school problem. And while I appreciate talking about it, and it's a great goal, let's not be glib here. It's a profoundly complicated problem that has mostly to do with class more than education. And I don't hear anything really from Connolly, in spite of his focus, really concretely what he's going to do about it, aside from saying we have to do better, but everybody agrees we need to do better.
Peter, thank you so much for your call.
Peter, Chris? I think that's a good critique. We haven't heard enough, and we don't quite believe that he's going to make massive changes.
Okay, so a couple of go ahead.
I challenge that a little bit. I believe that the conversation is there, and I think we talked about it earlier, is how do you apply some things that are working across the country or working here in other districts to our Boston public schools? And I think that the conversation has been there. You just have to listen for it. Now, whether they can deliver on it and whether it's bold enough is a whole nother story. But I think the conversation's been there. And I agree with the caller. It's about some other pieces to this puzzle. Poverty. You have to address poverty. But we can also fix the system as well. And the system is broken.
Mm. Now, we've just got a couple minutes to go. And Chris, since I've got you here, and you're such a wonderful wealth of historical knowledge about this city, give us just a little glimpse of, we talked about Menino there, but what about other mayors in years past that you think actually we should look to as an example?
You've given the two-minute warning. The one little stroke that I think is worth meditating, it's on what mayors can do and the limits on what they can do. But in modern times, the most important thing a mayor has done, in my humble opinion, was Kevin White's decision to keep 95 out of this city.
Right.
As Barney Frank has said, I-95 goes from Florida to Maine, but it turns left at Westwood because Kevin White, also Michael Dukakis, also the Boston Globe, said this could wreck our city. If you want to see what a mayor can do, go to Jamaica Plain, a little city rescued from the end. Ride the Orange Line, an amazing introduction to the varieties of Boston that has been rebuilt and revived because they didn't build that highway. I knew Kevin White very, very well. I didn't appreciate what he was doing until 35, 40 years later. But that decision was made on the basis of vision, on values, on a kind of political judgment that far exceeded, you know, the chatter, even his own romance with himself, you know, the mayor in love with the city, blah, blah, blah. It was an important decision, and somehow we've got to reconstruct the mentality that could make a choice like that and build real long-term significance into his term.
So that's a great point to end on. And Michael Curry and Ed Glaser, I want to give you both a chance to sort of reflect on that, because this idea of a long-term mentality sort of re-woven into civic leadership in Boston, I think is a very potent one. I mean, what's your thought about that?
You know, I agree with the mayor's ability to make a difference, but schools are very, very hard. It's important that the outrage never be lost, but it's also important to recognize that things are not likely to be solved overnight. However, the mayor does have control over housing, and I think this is a point of de Blasio's comment that I want to just, you know, cry out no against, that in fact we don't want to be saying no to new homes of any form, because there's no repealing the laws of supply and demand. If you make it too difficult to build, and it has been too difficult to build in Boston, you ensure that supply cannot keep up with demand. If we want lower middle-income housing, if we want affordable housing, we actually have to allow new units. And that is something that the next mayor can do. Because he has control over the BRA, ultimately, the new mayor can ensure that there are enough new units coming to market that we can actually make a dent in this affordable housing crisis.
Michael Curry, last word.
And I would agree. You know, you have an opportunity with the next mayor to deal with the BRA and the development, the construction, and in the inclusivity of what happens in this city, which has always been a challenge. Public safety is a big one. I don't believe we've done or committed an honest effort to addressing the violence in our city. So many unsolved murders in our city that we don't address. I think the reality is we in the communities of color often have a phrase we say, which if you're not at the table, you're on the table. We want to be at the table now and have a part of this new minority city and make this mayor accountable.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from Michael Curry, president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Great to have you back, Michael. Thank you so much. And Ed Glaser, professor of economics at Harvard and author of Triumph of the City. Ed, great to have you as well.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And Christopher Lydon, host of Radio Open Source. Chris, it was great to have you on the show.
Great pleasure, Megan. Thank you.
Listeners, here's my big idea. Let's wrap up these three guys into one and put them into City Hall.
I'll take it. Sure.
You can write me at radioboston.org and tell me what a terrible idea that is, too. But stick with us. There's more of the show coming up in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.